The boys are back in town.
Oh, I'm back in town.
Yeah, they never left.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And this is episode 135.
That's according a big number. You know I gotta interject there.
But when? I don't understand when you do and when you don't.
When it's important.
Sometimes he leaves a space for it and you don't say anything.
So what? When do you want me to pause? When it's like zeros and fives?
I don't know.
Like 135 is not an important one.
135 is like, it's Kenny's favorite nice number. Round. It's a five. It's big. It's like 13579. There's all kinds of patterns and stuff. It's a good number.
I have no idea when I'm supposed to pause, Nolan.
I honestly don't either.
Whenever I'm going to say something, you're supposed to pause.
According to Metacritic, we have played four of the top five PC games of the 90s as a part of this podcast.
Nice. Really?
Yeah, so not including our retro game of the week, do you think you guys can name one or two of the top five? I'm not asking you to do a necessary order, and I know that when these kind of questions are asked, you're like, whoa, I can't think of any game we've ever played.
No, I think I can do
but
it.
Can you try to name some of the top five PC games, according to Metacritic, of the 1990s?
StarCraft. This is fun. Oh, yeah.
No.
Wow. Okay.
That doesn't make the list.
Civ 2.
Apparently not. Not the top five. Civ 2, yes.
Okay. Kenny's what? Happy. Yeah, I'm a little confused by that too, Kenny.
No. The fact that... Okay, never mind. This is my friendly reminder that we did not give Civ 2 NGP
status, we did not.
And I'm still salty about it.
The other one, Baldur's Gate?
No.
Hmm.
You're naming some that are in the top 10.
Okay.
Kenny's gonna be blanking.
No. How about like one of the shooters? How about Quake?
Quake. Oh, yeah, yes.
Okay. Nice.
All right. So now y'all are just missing one of the other ones that we played.
Will we be able to get it? We played another big FPS. Doom. Duh.
Doom.
Has it to is be. Not Doom.
Oh,
it is what? One of the earliest games we played.
Wasn't it?
It was in the 90s.
Earliest games we played. PC. Well,
I just answered Kenny. That was in the 90s.
Oh, it was? Oh, Half-Life then.
Half-Life, correct. Y'all did good. No, that was
remarkable. Actually really good at this.
Half-Life, Civ 2, weird. Quake, Grim Fandango.
Okay.
Should not be on there. I never played
and
it, so I don't know.
The fifth is one hell of a game.
There you go.
Oh, there it is.
Our retro game of the week, Diablo.
Overview.
So Diablo is a ARPG, an action role-playing game in the kind of hack and slash style that came out. I say a, I probably should say the, because it really was one of the first kind of a genre creator that was released by Blizzard North, or developed by Blizzard North, rather, released by Blizzard Entertainment, in late 1996. So this really was a 1997 title. And it lives up to its name. Diablo literally is a game where your character is trying to dethrone the Lord of Terror himself, Diablo. It's set in the fictional kingdom of Candarus, but people will know the town better, as Tristram has become a really, really iconic place and a setting not just for this first Diablo title, but future Diablo titles.
Spoiler alerts.
I'm pretty sure that's not anywhere close to a spoiler.
We're not lore.
I don't know anything about any of this.
That's true. You're completely new to this franchise, aren't you, Dustin?
Yeah, I'm honestly, probably completely new to this type of game.
Even to the genre. You've never really done action RPGs almost at all.
No, I feel... So, what's... I guess a staple for this kind of genre are those colored drops. And I feel like I've played some games with colored drops, but it hasn't been this type thing.
Yeah, I think the closest you've played are closer to like RPG style, yeah, where they rank it that way. I'm trying to think of the...
Reckoning, the Reckoning game, Norm, yep, that you and I played.
That's
for
what I was just thinking, yeah, of. Mm-hmm.
That had some colored drops, but that's not this kind of...
No, but that's more typical RPG style. It's somewhere in the middle, but not true action RPG.
Are all of these the same kind of like isometric view?
Yes.
Like, is that a staple to... Okay.
Yes. For the most part.
What do you mean for the
really
most part?
Almost all of the game. I mean, we always throw around the term clone, but like Diablo really did start this. And then Diablo 2 arguably went and took it and did it even better, you know, depending what you're looking for in a game. And so really the whole genre is just people remaking and doing variations on the themes that they established here, which is kind of interesting because they didn't even really set out very initially to make this game in the format that it's in. They started development early on thinking it was going to be a more typical turn-based role-playing kind of game.
Right.
With claymation.
Which is crazy.
Did you know that, Nolan?
No. Claymation.
Yeah, like legit. They were going to use claymation
to do the
Clay
graphics?
Fighter. To mold, you know, mold in these characters. Like your character would be claymation. All the enemies.
One well, that's of a bullet the dodged.
Biggest decisions that could yeah. have changed history.
Changed gaming like, history.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So they didn't do that, and they did stick to the kind of dark theme, and really some of the inspiration that you can tell came from a lot of the roguelike games. This game has, you know, very heavy role-playing elements, but once it went real-time, really kind of stuck those action role-playing elements in there heavy. And so it's a fun combo of kind of the real-time action and the randomness and kind of gameplay dependency of loot drops that you get in a roguelike that kind of meet up and have a weird baby that is the ARPG genre that Diablo really was kind of the first one of.
And this game is rated M and
for mature.
And I don't I can't think of a ton of other games around then, maybe Doom and some others that were like pushing that boundary. I remember this game being like a no-no. I wasn't allowed to like, because it was satanic, like it was all the works were there, and it had like a pretty significant reputation of just being like, you can't play this game.
Well, and not just your mom, like Diablo has everything that your mother, any mother would have hated,
moms,
right? Like
yeah.
Sure.
demonic imagery, gruesome murders, creepy music. It's got all of that. Like they would hate Diablo, you know, while loving like Twilight or something like that. But
sure.
So I can't wrap my mind around that. But yeah, but even on the front cover, right? It's this huge devil. Like yeah. It's Satan, you know, like, I mean, so reasonably so. I mean, there's a lot of like dark things here. And we'll talk about aesthetics and we'll talk about like all of the feel and some of the visuals and gameplay. But I would say reasonably so, this isn't a kid's game, and it would be one that if kids were to play, I could easily see evoking nightmares.
Yeah, probably. I have really been looking forward to this episode because of Dustin never being introduced to this genre, and me and Kenny have been trying to get him to play it for a while. And Kenny, I think we're in for some good news. I'm guessing. I don't know. I haven't asked Dustin's opinion on it yet, but I have a good feeling.
I'm a little worried that this was the one, like it's old enough and kind of has some of those elements of early RPGs in terms of being a little grindy and repetitious and needing to run back into town and doing some things that I'm almost worried that there might be some hurdles that were too big. And I kind of wish his first taste had been, I don't even know, Diablo 2 or one of the kind of action RPGs kind of hitting their stride games. But I'm going to be really curious to see what he thought as well.
Well, no need to guess. Let's get into the gameplay section and talk about our experiences with the game this week.
Gameplay.
So very generally speaking, there's kind of two different locations for this game. There is what Kenny mentioned as the town of what Tristram?
Tristram.
And that's kind of your hub, your base. You've got a few different shops there. You can go back there to heal. That's where some of the quests begin. And then, very generally speaking, your second location is the dungeon. And because of the evil things that are happening in, and Kenny, you didn't really go much into story there, but there's some demonic activity going on in the basement of this cathedral there in the town. And then the game is going down into the basement of that church and descending further and further and further and further through different floors, which start off just kind of as normal basement floor. Well, not normal, but basement floors until you're finding yourself in hell itself.
Quite the descent.
Which is very roguelike. And I'm going to try this episode to not be like, and in Diablo 2, this happens and... like this is how they
it's going to be a struggle though.
Yeah. So I'm not going to do that a lot, but like I will say that this was I think them experimenting with this genre that they were essentially kind of creating. They were combining a bunch of different gameplay elements from games like roguelike stuff and descending further and further down. Was a little off-putting to me at first because that's not something I'm used to with these games. But yeah, that's what you do in this one. So I was kind of taken back by that. By the way, I've never played D1 extensively.
All right, let's get into the actual gameplay. So you're given, like before the game even begins, you're given an option of the class that you're going to select. And so you have, your character can be a warrior, a rogue, or a sorcerer. And those are differentiated not only by their character look, but by their attribute points, by what kind of armor and weapons they're able to equip, and they each have a unique ability as well.
And I went rogue this week, and I know that's like what I usually go, but for Diablo, I really like sorceress, but I went rogue, and I think we all went a different character, right?
So you could get different flavors. I played the sorceress.
Okay.
And I played a warrior. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And I gotta say, the rogue was not what I expected. So you start with a bow with the rogue, and I guess in my mind I was thinking daggers, but the bow is super good and I'm really glad I started with it. And I think some of these characters are harder than others. Like sorceress is pretty difficult in this game early on. It gets easier later, of course.
Yeah, but it's kind of early, it's a grind, but then it evens out.
Like early, it's a grind, but it quickly becomes the most OP, overpowered character. And I'll just let y'all know, one of the most difficult ones, is the warrior.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of the inverse. Warrior starts off really straightforward and easy, but as you go, it becomes... a real grind later.
Because although you're powerful, these AI characters, these enemies are tools and they run away from you, especially these dumb clan bowmen type things that just run away from you. Yeah, they're the worst. They run and like as a warrior, you're just either two-handing a weapon or your sword and shield. And so you have to run after them and then you finally have to get them to stop to be able to do an attack. It's difficult.
Hmm. Yeah, and like this game felt really slow to me too. So I can imagine you really struggling to like even catch up to enemies to smack them once and then they run away again. Like that's really annoying.
Yeah, this game is slow. There's no running. You've got one character speed, which is
brisk walk.
Yeah, which is one of the faults. You can't really speed up. I mean, Kenny, with you eventually get to just teleport everywhere, don't you?
Yep.
On like a first playthrough. You can eventually get to where you get teleport and you get enough stats, you get to where you can use it somewhat consistently. But I was never at a place where it was my main mode of transportation. That would have been a lot more play even.
But still, that walk is frustrating. And And at first it was really bothering me because, again, I'm used to at least a run stamina button that you can turn toggle on and off. But I really got into the like scavenging aspect of this game, which was really interesting. So there's actual like vendor management that you have to do. Like you've got to sell and buy things. You have to. And you got to pick up gold and kind of take it pretty slow and easy, at least in the beginning stages, because you're not given a ton. And that should bother me a lot, but I actually ended up really enjoying the speed of this game, even though it was very slow.
Talking about inventory management there, because that's a huge thing that is unique to this kind of genre, or at least to Diablo itself. I don't know. Y'all will have to let me know. But you've got an inventory like you do in most games, but you're very limited. And here it's based on like a puzzle. Like you have a certain amount of squares mm-hmm. that you can fill up with inventory, and different kinds of items take up different amount of squares. So just a simple potion will take up one square, but let's say a cleaver will take up like six squares yeah. or maybe even more. A cloak that you would wear, if you're not wearing it on your person, then it's going to be in your bag, quote unquote. And that's going to take up, you know, it could take up eight squares, and that's a lot of inventory space. And so you've got to manage that. Like I found myself having to go back to town quite often, not because I was low on health,
right.
but because I didn't have any more inventory space. And that was interesting. And I kind of like that inventory thing, but I don't like how difficult it was to get back to town and then have to backtrack. And I don't like how limited my space was. And I just wish that I could upgrade that at some point. And maybe you can. I didn't get all the way through the game this week.
You can't upgrade the space, although Diablo 1 is generous in that items you drop on the ground are remembered and they're saved unless you start a new game. So if you want to keep an item and don't want it in your bag, you can run into the middle of the town, drop it, and then come pick it up when you need it. That's yeah. really counterintuitive. Later on, these kind of games all tend to give you more like permanent storage. They tend to give you a stash or something to kind of put things that you want to keep but that you don't want to carry. Mm-hmm. But this game didn't. And so you're right. There's lots of that coming and going, especially early. They give you some answers for that later. Not only does the dungeon give you kind of shortcuts back to town so that occasionally you don't have to go through all of the dungeon in a row to get to where you were, but you also get a spell that all of the characters can learn, Town Portal, that will let you go straight back into town if you're lucky enough to find it or be able to buy it or have it drop.
And yeah, Dustin, that is a staple, that the inventory thing. And as you were talking through it, I kind of just, it hit me, and it shouldn't. I mean, this isn't like revolutionary. I should have known this, but I guess that was them trying to add some sort of realism to it. Like you can't carry around like three giant cleavers.
Yeah, and, which I'm like, and I'm all about, like, I really actually like that square system. I just didn't like how, I mean, especially me who wants to be able to take everything back right. and identify everything, which we need to talk about identify, because that's something that that I was unfamiliar with mm-hmm. and I actually find a super interesting mechanic. But I found myself completely overloaded multiple times. And then, you know, like I would drop one item to pick up another just to look at its stats to see if I wanted to go sell that first. And with me not having tons of magic, like I was never able to like permanently learn a spell. I'm assuming those books help you permanently learn a spell.
Yeah. If you get a yes. book, that is how you learn okay. the spell forever, as opposed to like a scroll that lets you cast it once.
Like, and it's my fault, but like my magic never got above 15. So like I wasn't able to really learn any spell. I was able to use these scrolls though every once in a while to get back to town. And then, yeah, just like you mentioned, Kenny, I mean, I'd played multiple hours, but finally I got down to, I think it was maybe floor six, and there's a quick path back to town straight from there. So I don't have to use one of my scrolls. So that was super nice.
And I'll say, as a warrior, you wouldn't have gotten your mana up that high. Like generally you invest that, I mean, I guess we can talk about that. Like you, when you level up, you have points to assign, and you have strength, dex, vitality, and magic. So I'm assuming you put a lot of yours in strength when you leveled up, and vitality.
Yeah, I would do something like 3 for strength, and then I would up vitality and dexterity some. Right. I needed to get dexterity up because my goal this week, like my first goal was, hey, this week I just want to defeat the butcher, which is kind of super cool because that's the first quest that I was given. I don't know if it was given to y'all because, again, there's so much to talk about here, but the randomization of this thing. Mm-hmm. I think you can play through this game without even getting the quest Defeat the Butcher, but that was the first quest that I got. And I realized that although I came to him early in my gameplay, I was not even close to being able to beat him.
He's brutal.
He's tough. He's thick. He's quick. He stuns you. And he just keeps chopping with his cleaver. And so I was struggling and realized early on that, hey, even though this is the first quest I was given, I can't beat him yet. And so I had to go around and I had to grind or go through the dungeons. And finally, around level 7, I think, after I'd gotten my dexterity up high enough so that I was able to hit him and dodge enough attacks and pop enough potions, I was able to finally defeat him. But then, man, although I had accomplished my first goal or like my goal for the week, I needed to keep playing at that point.
Yeah, because it gets addicting, like, especially once you beat the butcher and it's like, oh, wow, he dropped his item, the cleaver, that's one of my favorite things about this series is the reward system. Like, just that little push to keep playing, like, here's something cool. And stats for me this week, so I was a rogue, I invested in dex and not in magic, and the only thing I put in strength was enough to equip the items I wanted. So some items have a skill requirement before you can equip it. So like a bow I wanted to use, I needed 28 strength. So I had to get up to 28 strength before I could even use it. So that's another way that they balance throughout the series, is making you, it's like skill checks. So you have to have a certain amount to use it.
Yeah, in fact, it's the primary way that they differentiate. Besides there being ceiling limits for each class on how high you can level up a certain attribute and how heavily those attributes affect you. Like as a caster, as a sorcerer, you're going to get more benefit from putting that point in magic than you are as one of the other classes. But besides that, you're free to level up anything in any order you want. And all spells and all items, if you have enough stats to use them, are usable. And so some people playing like a sorcerer, because early game, keeping up with actually casting mana and killing things magically is insanely difficult. It's just a high cost and you don't have a big enough pool, and walking back and forth into town where you don't get any free mana recharge, like you get a heal recharge, you have to buy mana potions. It can actually be really difficult. And so there's a lot of people who will pick up a bow and play the whole beginning part of the game with just a sorcerer with a bow and arrow. And you can level up your magic enough to learn some spells as those other characters if you want. So they kept it really kind of open, which is interesting. Later, as the genre developed, that kind of got tightened up and there was more unique things per class. But that's sort of the only real difference here, is you can or you can't equip something.
And Kenny, you just mentioned something in there that I wanted to talk about too, the potions. Dustin made me laugh this week because he asked me, "What am I doing something wrong by having 8 potions on my belt? Belt full of potions." Because it kind of seems like skills or items might go there. But I was like, nope, that's exactly what you want.
I played a lot more of this game than you guys this week. I was able to actually beat it, the single player kind of, one playthrough, Kill Diablo. And I probably spent over 100,000 in-game money on mana potions throughout the course of the game.
You have
thing
to
that's
have
interesting.
Them.
Yeah, you've got to have them. But the thing that's interesting is I've got a lot of money. I don't, but a lot for me. Like, and I realized that after 5,000 coins is your limit for one square, and then it starts a second square, which sometimes you've got to do because some of the things that you would buy, I guess, are a lot more expensive than just 5,000. But I'm trying to figure out where to, what to buy and when to buy and if to buy. Like, I've got plenty of coin to use on potions, and then those are drops in the dungeons as well. Mm-hmm. But then what I had read as a tip and what I thought is just kind of custom is that your store, you usually don't get to, it's usually not worth it to buy things there because you can find drops for free that are often better. Is that the case here, or should have I been spending my hard earned money or stolen money for items in the town?
I think it kind of depends. I usually think in my, again, somewhat limited experience, I'm no expert by any means, but finding one or two really important iconic purchases is going to be important for you. So if you're a caster, that's either finding a staff that will give you like a spell that you use continuously to just keep you from having to chug so many mana pots, and it actually becomes sort of an economic decision to buy something expensive like that, or to buy a certain spell that you haven't had drop for you, but that's really important. Like in this case, my playthrough, I did not have mana shield ever drop for me, you know, in the dungeon. And that becomes a really important spell for your survivability. So as soon as the witch offered it to me, even though it was crazy expensive and I had to even sell some gear that I was planning to use to get it, I sold it so that I could know that I had that sort of staple. So I think it's kind of worth filling in one really important lack, you know, maybe getting some really good hit recovery if you don't have it or whatever else. But yeah, it's an interesting choice. And there's not a right answer. And the stuff that they sell in town is crazy expensive.
I think, Dustin, you did the, I mean, there's not much you can do. Like, I think it's worth it to spend your money earlier. Like, early game, they'll maybe have some stuff that you can use. But like you said, you're not seeing anything worth it. And I mean, later you'll just get drops. I think they just didn't balance the gold system the way they should have. I think that was kind of a flaw. Like, they messed up there. Nothing game-breaking, but just could have been more interesting, you know, to be able to use all the hard-earned gold in a productive way.
I definitely found myself making more economic decisions than I thought I would based on the kind of game it was. You know, is this worth it? What will this cost me? Do I have enough gold to swing this?
Yeah.
If I don't get another really expensive item drop, am I going to have to start a new game? Which is an interesting option. If you hit a difficulty wall, because this is all randomly generated, you could get really, really tough enemies and the tougher quests and really, really poor drops. And so you may get to a place where you're out of gold and your equipment's breaking and you don't have enough spells or skills to progress past the enemies. The game will actually let you start a brand new game with your character intact and then begin the dungeon at the beginning where it's nice and easy and work your way through all that content again to give you some more gold and some more experience and some more chances at item drops.
I don't know if I realized that.
Yeah, it's a really creative solution, a somewhat creative solution to you know, to their difficulty, to the possible difficulty of this game.
Hey, so let me say one thing. I had mentioned it earlier, and before we get too far away from like item attributes and things like this, because I think a lot of what you're mentioning, Kenny, is you've got to know the game a lot better than I did on this first play to know what's wise purchases, what's not, what you're going to find, what you're not. It's not just stats of like this. It's not as cut and dry as this sword does this damage or this helmet protects this or is this kind of armor class. Some of these items and weapons have these additional stats like plus 25% chance to do this or like plus this defense against fire attacks and again, that's randomized. So it's not just every time you find this hat, it's always going to be the same. And then a lot of them, you have to use a spell or take it back to town to one of the characters there and have them identify an item that has not yet been identified. And then not only does it tell you then what that thing does, but I think you have to identify it to unlock that potential,
that's
right?
That's correct.
Yeah, you don't get any of the bonus stats until ID it.
That's crazy. And that's super cool because and it's super risky too. But I think the randomization is determined once you pick up that item, not when you identify it. So I was able to save and then see if the identify, you know, was worth it. And it's cool because sometimes like I could sell a hat for 67 gold, or I could identify it. And then I had one that then instantly because of the attributes, it became like I could sell it for 600 something gold, or I could wear it because it's great.
Yeah.
Or there was one, I think it was a cloak or a piece of armor that I could sell for like, I don't know, 67 or 80 or something like that. But then after I could sell it for a lot more. I could sell it for a couple hundred. And then I identified it and it was like a cloak of thorns or something. So it did damage to me or took my HP down. And so I could sell it for one. So it would have been better to sell without identifying. It's just a super interesting mechanic that I'm not used to.
Yeah. And I love that mechanic in the Diablo series because it provides that extra level of like mystery and what am I looking for? Like just adventuring, because then it's like, okay, is this going to be the one, especially in like when Kenny and I were in the D3 days, like in the early days, there was this thing called the auction house, which allowed you to sell items for in-game money.
Well, actually, for a little while, for real money.
Yeah. Which was a bad choice.
That's a whole other conversation, but a terrible idea.
Right. Anyways, there were still some fun elements to it though, because then I'd be like, oh, I don't need this, but I can sell this to someone on there. And so I've always loved the ID system that you're talking about. And it's super interesting to me because I've known about it and Kenny's known about it. It's just, we're used to it. And so hearing you talk about it, I don't know. I just really love the fact that you played this game this week.
Yeah.
There's so many things about this game, and so I'm assuming this specific genre, that is not prevalent in other games that I'm familiar with, that identify as one of them, the constant backtracking, the going just down deeper and deeper, there's so many things about, in all other games, when you find a treasure chest and you open it, there's something in there. In this randomized game, there are many chests that have nothing in it, which is completely fine. I like that randomization to it. But like, there's just so many different mechanics here. I mean, we could take multiple podcasts to talk about all of the things that are unique about this kind of genre compared to other games. But
yeah,
I think we've named a few here. It's an interesting thing, and it's so different from so many other types of games that I've played.
Aged.
So you'll have to tell me, and I think it's fair to talk about, but not necessarily fair to compare, if in future Diablo games or if in other games of this genre does this better. But I felt like the battle system was super minimalistic, and I think even to a fault. Especially for Warrior, like all I was doing was getting close to an enemy and then rapidly clicking on that enemy to swing my weapon. There's nothing else. There's no different moves that I can do. I can't even hold my mouse down and it won't even auto attack. And I don't think there's an option for that. There's nothing unique or fun or impressive about that battle mechanic.
Yeah,
that's certainly an area that is fixed in future action RPGs.
Yeah, and like mobility spells, for instance, like Barbarian is the warrior from this game and the future games. They have Leap Slam, which is this giant leap that he can do to close the gaps and get in people's face, which was so necessary. And like in hindsight, I should have put you on the Rogue and I should have played Warrior because I think you would have enjoyed Rogue a little more. But yeah, I definitely felt that even on Rogue, like the battle system just is very slowed down, but I had patience for it because I know that they were new to this and they were building something new. And so something that you may not know in later installments is like swarms and swarms of enemies. Like I'm talking giant groups of enemies swarming you and you having to deal with them with AoE. And there's not a ton of that in this game. I think Sorceress maybe has the most interesting spells and ways to deal with enemies. So I do agree, or I agree with you on the struggles you had. And I also think they kind of failed to balance out the classes for sure in this one. Like there's a clear winner and then there's just like, on the other two. Now, something that really kind of held me up this week playing this game was the the item descriptions being pretty difficult to read and follow at times.
Especially for someone who's, for me, who's not familiar with this kind of stuff.
Yes. And right. So I can't even imagine, like, I at least understood some of the stats that were on there.
I was like, this sounds better than what I'm using right now, but I don't know.
Right. And it's just white text. It's kind of what I'm talking about. Like just from how it's presented, standpoint. It's just white text that almost looks like a paragraph sometimes.
Like a sentence, yeah.
And I'm just like, wait, what? Hold on. What am I looking at? And again, in D2 and later, they color code it better and kind of break up the different information that you need to, that your eyes get drawn to. So I was just in the dungeon a lot of the time, just reading and staring at my inventory, which I like that though.
Well, and that's if you can find the items. I think one of the big frustrations here for modern gamers would be that it's a dark game, and that's fine. That's aesthetics, but it's very difficult to see what drops from enemies, or if anything drops. Like, sure, I can see the gold piles, but if someone drops a tiny weapon or a ring or any of these things, it is very, very easy to miss that. Yeah. Especially from this isometric view where you've got walls that you're kind of seeing through to be able to fight these enemies. Yeah. But again, they can pile up, their dead bones or bodies are there. And so, man, there were many times where I'm sure that I walked right past a supreme weapon that would take me all the way to the end super easily.
Yeah, I've had it work both ways. There were times that I would like have something in my inventory that I don't remember clicking on because you didn't see it, but you were walking around and you just happened to get lucky enough to click on it. But most of the time, it's something you miss. I found myself waiting for auditory clues quite a bit, especially for like rings or amulets dropping.
Yep.
And then having to like kind of hunt and look for them. And I also took the kind of extreme, and it's terrible for the overall visual and aesthetic, but of actually like in the game manually turning up the gamma settings so that things were literally brighter. Because it's just so dark and it's so easy to miss stuff. And that's something that you can do dark tone without doing, you know, that was like poor user interface, really. Right. And again, something they vastly improve on in the future.
And I think there's a mod that I wasn't able to get, but I think there's a D1 like little enhancement pack that you can get that someone made where it will show you those items on the ground, and like you can hold alt and it will pop up any items on the ground and tell you what it is.
Yeah, that's what I'm used to in other games that where there are drops where you can hold like tab or alt or something like that, and you can see all the things that are interactable, like doors and chests. And like I miss chests because they're dark and walls are covering them up, you know? And that's part of the exploration for sure, but I think visually they could have done it better. But one of the things that I think that ages well is that you've got insane replay value with this game. Mm-hmm. Like one of the few games where you, I don't know about endless, but near limitless replay value, because you can, like Kenny said, you can use your same character and like you can not only start a new game with your character, I think you mentioned, Kenny, but you can play through the entire game again after beating it. The random map generator gives you a different play each time from what I gather. It's just there's so much replay here.
There is. And there's even more replay if you're playing multiplayer. They chose to do something really interesting here that I think because they knew, or through development, they kind of realized that multiplayer was going to be one of the even more popular aspects of this game, though it's a successful single-player game. The single-player game is relatively short. It's no, like, you know, afternoon stroll, but it's not long. But if you're playing on multiplayer, where they had a little bit more control over people not cheating in really overt ways, they actually add two higher difficulty levels. You can play the game through the first time, and then you can go back and play on a nightmare difficulty, and then you can go back and play on what is called a hell difficulty, which scales exactly as it sounds like. And as difficult as this game is, even on the normal level, like hell truly is. If you haven't put time into grinding and having a really, really, really strong character, it's just going to absolutely work you.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not this game receives our vote for New Game Plus status, which is just our general thumbs up or thumbs down. It requires 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. I don't know what kind of order we want to go in.
You last, probably, right? Or no?
Yeah, maybe, or at least in the middle. Kenny beat the game, and Kenny has the most history with the game, fair. So I think it would only be fair if Kenny begins.
I mean, this game gets New Game Plus. It's one of those going in because I'd played it before, and I knew how iconic it was, and we didn't talk about a lot of this. We talked about it starting a new genre, but it was a huge commercial success. It just exploded. It kind of helped solidify who Blizzard ended up becoming, and they've had a huge effect on gaming since then and on competitive gaming and esports. And like, this game being successful was big, and not just, you know, for them, but for kind of wider scope kinds of things. And so it would be crazy for me to not give this game New Game Plus. I loved it. I beat it. It's not a perfect game, however, and that's worth pointing out. There's a reason that those of us who've played it kept saying, oh, yeah, but then in D2 they fix this, and then in D2 they fix that. And so I don't want to, like, overstate, because walking is annoying. It's really grindy. There's some UI kinds of issues that are obnoxious. It's not got good balance. And so it is a New Game Plus title for sure, but it is not a perfect game. It has some flaws.
Is this one of those that fits into your theory that the sequels do it better?
Absolutely. 100. This maybe proves the case.
All right, Nolan, go ahead.
Yeah. It definitely gets New Game Plus from me. And pretty much what Kenny said, I don't have a ton to add to that. But I do have to talk about the Tristram music. It is acoustic guitar and like harmonics, and just kind of like is creepy, but really impressive to me that they pulled it off with just like acoustics. And it's iconic. It's in every game, the Tristram song. So I love this game, and I think that Dustin needs to play D2 because it has more story and more exploration, and yeah, it's just better. So New Game Plus.
We may have to have a conversation post podcast, but I could see us really heavily trying to recruit him to do a playthrough of Diablo 2 multiplayer.
Don't worry, I've already got my spiel.
Get him into the story, because yeah, it's a genre that I'm so surprised you haven't been in, Dustin. I feel like it's right up your alley. But was I right?
Well, you're about to find out. I don't think that Diablo does a lot of firsts. Like, we've played other games that have done more firsts. And what I mean by that is that I think, for example, randomized levels had been a thing. I think that, you know, drops, maybe even colored loot had been a thing. And I think online multiplayer in some form or fashion had been done, but they weren't staples, at least. And so I do think that Diablo helped to define and set the tone for what those things would become. I agree with these guys that it's not a perfect game. There are a lot, there are a significant amount of aging issues here, and I haven't played Diablo 2, but I do imagine that they, you know, just built on what was already good here and corrected what was not. Now, aesthetically, it's not my cup of tea, and again, it wouldn't have been your mother's either. But it's a game that I surprisingly found myself quite addicted to. I played an hour or so before we started recording this podcast. My goal was to defeat the Butcher, and I'm way past that now. Dude. And if I've got the time, I'll keep playing. But man, part of me even wants to just scrap this and start with Diablo 2. So maybe we'll have to record a secret episode talking about if that's going to happen or not, and y'all trying to convince me. But Diablo, the first in the series, does receive my vote for New Game Plus status, which means that Diablo is New Game Plus certified.
Are you happy, Kenny?
I am. I'm happy. I'm not surprised. I was a little worried. But I'm not surprised, because this game is, it's just fun. Like, even with some of its flaws, it's just fun.
We had a few of our friends write in this week to let us know their thoughts on the game. Jeff wrote in and said, this game is dark, gory, and very immersive, but never scary, at least for me. I don't see how anyone can get scared in a game with isometric point of view. Interesting thing is, I wasn't even born when the first Diablo was released, so I just played through it this week for the very first time. It was a lot of fun, and it gets my vote for NGP status.
You can get scared in that opening cutscene. The bird pecking at a corpse and taking the eye out.
I literally remember the moment I first encountered the butcher playing this game as a kid.
That's kind of scary. He's so fast.
And I got scared. Like, now, games are different today. Like, part of that even literally is a generational thing. Like, this game graphics and stuff, when you were playing it when it first came out, was about as immersive as it got. And you had some creepy music, and then suddenly a character that jumps out and just assaults you. I'd say that could be literally scary. But yeah, our perspectives on what is intense have certainly changed over time.
I don't know. I think it definitely has that fear factor there. You open doors and you can't see what's in the room that you just opened until you step inside. And when you step inside and see a horde of enemies that start racing after you, that's pretty scary. And the lower and lower you get, there's so much to talk about this game, but there is so many different kind of enemies, and they just get more and more demonic and more scary the further and further down you go. And with
more and more immunities so that you have no way of killing them, really. It's awful.
That's terrifying, yeah. Antonin wrote in and he said, hi all, I wish that I had the time to write a lengthy email about Diablo, to write about its achievements, the team behind it, and all the crazy fun facts that I've memorized. Unfortunately, I don't, so let me just say that I had a bunch of fun playing this game. I tried to kill the butcher with my sorcerer, and as you can imagine, I wasn't able to. I've decided to play this game from start to end, however, and I hope you all liked the game enough to consider it as well. P.S. Crossing my fingers that the next game of the week is Diablo 2.
Dude, me too, and I've already started playing it, so we'll see.
Thank you guys for writing in. We appreciate it. For those of you that are listening, any and every week, you can write in, send your thoughts to the Retro Game of the Week to ngppodcast@gmail.com, and we'd love to include your thoughts as a part of our episode next week.
All right, is it time? Do we get our very own weekly loot drop?
I like it. Nice. And we're going to have to find out what color of this loot it is. And here's the thing. Whatever this is, we're going to be playing it for 2 weeks because next week we are recording our regularly late, perpetually late retro recap of the last 25 episodes. And so whatever this game is that is selected, we're playing it for 2 weeks straight.
It's a lot of pressure.
We're randomly selecting now. We're going to be playing an action-adventure video game that came out for the PlayStation, the PC, the Game Boy Color, the Game Boy Advance, and Mac OS, and was remade 2 years later for the PlayStation 2, Xbox, and Nintendo GameCube. This game was originally released in 2001, and it was based on a novel of the same name and the film adaptation. We are going to be playing Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
This is a big speed run game, actually. A lot of
is
people,
it really?
Yes. Yeah.
On which system?
I think PlayStation. I'm not sure, though. That's interesting. 2 weeks of Harry Potter.
14 days of Harry Potter.
I have a feeling I'm going to be more likely to reread some of the books in the next 2 weeks than to play the games. But I may be surprised.
Hey, good book series, good movie series,
yeah,
good game series.
Maybe.
We'll find out.
Join us in Discord. We've got one for our community. And you can, this is your invite. Consider this an invite, free invitation. Go to Twitter, and there is a link at the top in the pinned tweet. Come join us.
Oh, we want to say thanks to all of our supporters, especially those of you who support us on patreon.com. Our patrons help make this show a reality, and we're appreciative of that. Special thanks to our producer level supporters, Bradley, Zion, and Gimbarino.
As always, we'd love for you to visit us on our social media. That's Facebook and Twitter at NGP Podcast. We've got a YouTube channel where there's regular video content going up there. I'm sure one of us will do a first play within the next few days for Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. And then we've been doing some live streams as well. And I know Nolan's doing some speed running, and I'm doing some just leisurely. So make sure to check us out on those things. Listen to us directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you're the first to get new NGP episodes, and feel free to leave a kind 5-star rating and review. Thank you, as always, to Tom Tate, who edits and produces each and every one of our episodes. Join us next week as we play Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm Deckard Cain.
And this has been New Game Plus.